Okay, now this is it. Your turn, the interactive night, Friday into Saturday morning, open lines. Hey, by the way, after I got off the air last night, went home, fell asleep about 4:30-ish Central Time in the morning, right? Woke up at 5:30 in the morning and could not go back to sleep. It's got to be one of the worst feelings because, first of all, you're exhausted, but you can't sleep. But what do you do? There's nothing to do. And I was thinking of just walking around the neighborhood or something. It was very bizarre. I must have a lot on my mind or the old brain's clicking along or something. So in addition to everything we're doing, let's open up a special hotline. I want to know if you've ever had something like that where you just could not sleep and what you had to go through in life. As a matter of fact, I've got a friend of mine. She can't sleep at all. Her husband tells me that she is awake all the time. And so check in with me. That special line, 818-817-0021. A little potpourri of life tonight. 818-817-0021. Lots to talk with you about. We'll get right into open lines in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, back with you. Open lines here on Coast to Coast AM. And let's go right to the phones. We'll go to Don in Omaha, Nebraska to get things started on us. Go ahead, Don. Hey, how are you?
Hey, that was quick. Can you hear me all right?
I sure can. Thank you.
My phone's a bit of a dinosaur, so bear with me. first of all, I got to say, you and your screeners are very nice people. Thank you so much for always being nice to me and making me feel better about things.
You are welcome.
And I called to tell you that sometimes when I'm listening to your show, I'll be writing. I'm writing this book that may never get published. And one of your guests invariably will say a word and I'll be in the middle of writing that same word. And I don't know why that is. It's just a weird phenomenon.
It's always synchronicity, isn't it?
I guess that's what it is. Oh, can I say one more thing, George?
Yeah, sure thing.
On your bumper music, there's a song I'd like to recommend. Have you ever heard the old song, The Shifting Whispering Sands?
The Shifting Whispering Sands. By whom? Who played it?
There's two versions I would recommend. One is Ken Nordine. You might remember him. He did the word jazz, and I forget what you call that, the genre. And Jim Reeves, the country music singer. They both do really good versions of that, and you need to listen to it if you have time because it would be perfect for your show, I think.
Okay, we will do that. I'll check into that, Don.
Thanks a lot, George.
Always looking for new and exciting bumper songs. And by the way, those of you who didn't hear my announcement a couple days ago or read anything on our website, I just want you to know that we have worked out a deal with the network on a very new, very long, long-term contract. We're all excited about it. It does several things for me. One, it keeps the stability of my incredible staff on Coast to Coast. And keeps this program going, as I have said, in the national trades, possibly into when men land on Mars, and women, of course, astronauts. It's a deal we started working on several months ago, and it will pick up and just take us well into the future. So we're going to be here for you for a long, long time. Let's go back to the phones. We'll go to Salina, Ohio. Daniel is with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Dan, how are you?
Hey, George, how are you?
Okay, not bad.
Hey, I was calling up, you know, being open lines and everything about the condition, what you, since you're from Detroit, my mother was from Detroit, and I remember going up there as a kid all the time. I love Detroit, but, I mean, you know, it's going bankrupt and everything, you know?
It sure is. They filed for bankruptcy.
You know, I was just kind of calling up to see what your thoughts was about that. I mean, that was a beautiful city, George.
Oh, it sure was. You know, I left Detroit, Dan, in 1978. I went to Minneapolis for a year. Then I went to St. Louis. And now, of course, I'm all over the map. But Detroit was a great town, strong, powerful. The automobile industry was popping along. We had Chrysler there, General Motors, Ford Motor Company was in Dearborn, Michigan, but that was all part of the same. Henry Ford II built the Renaissance Center. General Mills was in the Fisher Building. They've since moved. They could be in the Renaissance Center now. Great town, just strong. And I had a great career there as a broadcaster for for a number of years. My mother still lives there, and my two sisters are still there. And it's a shame to see it go bankrupt. It's a shame to see it go down. But I've got to tell you, I don't think it's the only big U.S. city that's going to have these kinds of financial problems. It's happening all over the country. Detroit just happened to be the first of the big towns to do it. And there will definitely be more. Sign of the times, I'm afraid. Let's go to Sam in Chandler, Arizona on our hotline. Hey, Sam, go ahead.
Hi, George. I wanted to just let you know I haven't been able to sleep more than about 3 to 4 hours a night for the past year.
It's frustrating, isn't it?
It's really frustrating. I've tried different herbal supplements, and way in the past I tried different prescription ones, but it just doesn't seem to matter. And right now I work nights. I work 6 p.m. to 6 a.m., so a couple days a week. And so that actually works out for me pretty well for my schedule. But then when I get home, I'll sleep maybe from 7 to 11, and then I'm up all night again. So I just don't sleep very much at all.
When you wake up and only get those 3 hours, are you refreshed or are you exhausted?
I'm exhausted, but not too long after, I'll have my energy to pretty much go for the rest of the day. So I'll be pretty exhausted for maybe the first hour or two, and then I'm just ready to go for the rest of the day and for all night. And so I'll usually be up for anywhere from 20 to 24 hours and running on only the 3-4 hours of sleep. I only got 3 hours of sleep last night, and I'm up all night tonight.
Now, when you wake up, though, are you groggy or are you, like, ready to go?
I'm not groggy. I'm just, I'm slower. I'm just, sort of taking my time doing, getting a cup of coffee and making some breakfast. I'm not really aggravated or groggy. And then very few times I'll wake up ready to go. And I think a lot of this comes from, I got out of the Navy about a year ago. And, as you know, when you're in the service, you don't sleep a lot. And I was on a ship, so very frequently I was only getting 2 to 3 hours of sleep. And on deployment, I slept maybe 2 hours a night for 3 months.
Jeez.
So I think maybe a lot of this is still reminiscent of that, but I figured maybe I would have adjusted by now in my new life. But I don't know. I can't figure it out. Maybe that's it, but maybe that's not.
Have you thought about going to a sleep disorder clinic?
I've thought about it. I'm actually seeing a couple of different homeopathic physicians right now for other things, and each one of them is trying to help me out in different ways and figure that out. But that's definitely an option I can try, is going to a sleep specialist. I am not quite sure what they would be able to, what they do. I've never been to one, but I can certainly try.
Yeah, if all else fails. Thanks, Sam. I appreciate you being on the program. I know I've tried melatonin in the past. I only get about 5 hours a day. I mean, I don't get that much. But, if you wake up after an hour, that just shatters the whole day. I have learned how to sleep on a plane, which is the greatest thing since sliced bread, because it's like time traveling, especially if you're traveling between L.A. and St. Louis, it's about 3.5-4 hours. If you can sleep for a couple hours, I mean, you really cut the flight in half. You really do. And on the short little jumps, like tomorrow, I've got to go from St. Louis to Chicago and Chicago down to Bentonville, Arkansas, for that major event we're going to be at tomorrow. If I can get a little bit of sleep there, too, I mean, it really goes by. So that I was never able to do that until about a year ago. Let's go to Jan in Hawaii. Welcome to the program, Jan.
Hey. Hi
there.
Good to talk to you.
You too. You're on the Big Island, I take it, right?
Yeah, I live up on about 4,000 feet up on the side of Mauna Loa, kind of overlooking South Point and the beautiful community of Ocean View. I'm sure there's a lot of people listening right now who are going, oh, my God.
Yeah, really. And Mauna Kea is still doing its thing?
Yeah, it's a little bit slowing down a little bit, but we're having a lot of haze these days. But I was a paramedic for almost 15 years here on the Big Island, and that definitely affected my sleeping pattern, because we got most of our calls, it seemed like, in the middle of the night, of course.
Of course, yeah.
And what I have found after I have retired is that I also suffer from tinnitus, kind of like
Ian did, yeah. When
it does. And I found that a fan, just a small fan, going by my side of my bed, offers just about enough gray noise to put me to sleep.
That's along with your show. In a good way, I hope.
Oh, definitely. I'll make it all the way through. In fact, I end up falling asleep over here on the islands. They run your show twice. And so I will listen to the whole thing, sometimes twice. But most of the time I fall asleep about halfway through second one.
By the way, as an emergency technician, what was some of the strangest things that ever happened that you were on?
The strangest things that ever happened. Well, not to get into the gross things, but I think one of the funniest things, I over here, I responded probably in my career more to behavioral disorders than anything else. Probably the next was traffic accidents. But I once responded to a lady who was sitting on her lanai who had a pile of pills, probably 30 or 40 different kinds in a pile, about 2 feet in diameter and about a foot tall. And she was just sitting there taking them, trying to kill herself.
Oh, my God.
It was pretty amazing. You know, that one was probably the one that sticks out the most. I mean, I saw a lot of stuff that wasn't really worth talking about, but that was pretty humorous.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Very sad. Hey, thanks. Enjoy the Big Island. Let's go next to Peter in Middletown, Connecticut. Welcome to the program. Hi, Peter.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good.
I have a question regarding the bankruptcy in Detroit. I've been a longtime listener going back to Art Bell days many, many years ago. And I've never heard one caller ask or comment about how there's so much money available for pro athletes, millions and millions of dollars year after year for these record contracts. And yet cities like Detroit filing for bankruptcy. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, let me explain that. It's a couple different issues. One, of course, the sports ownership, they're private entities, and these owners are throwing big bucks to the players. But most of the money, it's coming from television rights. The television rights that divvy it up, you know, football makes the most, and basketball is very high too. But that's where they get the bulk of their money, where they then give it to the players. And so, you know, on one hand, you've got the city of Detroit, which is a public entity with its citizenry, which it has moved out by and large, and that those who remain in the city, not everybody, but most of them, are lower to middle income people. Big cities, that's what it is. It's cheaper to live in the big city, so you have lower income or middle income people living there, and consequently, your tax base gets eroded. And when that happens, everything seems to plummet. And the sad part about the city of Detroit and its bankruptcy filing are those people who have been working for the city for years, law enforcement, firefighters, dedicated people, their pensions are going to get it. And, I mean, they have lived to retire on those pensions. And I don't know how many of you are drawing Social Security right now, but that's another story right there. If that's your only income stream, I want to know how you can balance that, because that's not a lot of money. Let's go to Gene in Ferguson, Missouri. Hello, Gene. How are you?
Good, George. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Hello?
Yep. Are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. I just couldn't hear you at first.
All right.
I wanted to talk to you about sleep patterns and the trouble that I've been having with them also.
All right. What's happening to you?
Well, about 9 years ago, a week before my mother passed away, I started having insomnia. And I've had it more often than not in those 9 years.
Can you pinpoint what's happening to you or why?
Well, I see a pain management psychiatrist, and he can't figure it out. And I also see a therapist every 2 weeks, a psychologist. I have quite a few medical problems, mostly regarding my back. And because of that, I have major depression, so that's why I see a psychologist. just to talk things out. And they can't really give me a specific reason why I have the insomnia, other than it might be part of the depression. It might not. It might just be something that afflicts me from time to time.
You listen to the full program, right? And then do you try to go to bed right after that?
I sometimes try to go to sleep during that because my husband tapes every program, all 4 hours, on one of those SD cards.
All right.
He bought a new machine to do that with. And so if we don't get to listen to the whole program, then we'll listen to it the next day.
All right. But generally, when do you try to go to bed?
I try at midnight.
Midnight,
but then I'm usually up again within a half hour to an hour if I can't go to sleep.
And so you're up for the whole night then, right?
Yes.
I know. It's a frustrating thing. This doesn't happen to me a lot at all. But, man, when it does, it's weird. And another thing that's strange for people, panic attacks. I don't know what causes those things, but, man, when they come on, you think this is it. This is, you know, it's over for me. And then your brain starts to think of even more stranger things. I mean, that if you've had a panic attack, it's as strange as it comes. You know, my buddy who's a ring announcer had one in the ring, and he thought he was going to lose it. You know, let's go next to Joseph in Louisville, Kentucky. Hey, Joseph, welcome to the show.
Hey, Joe. It's an honor to talk to you. I've been listening to you. I'm 31 since 2006, and
well,
I was working nights for Toyota, and I just listened to your show. I've been totally passionate for the Liberty Movement with Ron Paul, and I've been, you know, your show has shed light on things that most media outlets doesn't showcase on, with economics and, you know, what's going to be happening in the future if we don't change our past. But going back to sleep patterns, I do believe everything is connected. And then obviously a lot of people in this country, you know, everybody's so fast paced, they eat processed food, they're highly stressed. And I'm a huge believer in, you know, you are what you eat. It's a huge cliche, but I'm telling you, if you eat clean, eat raw veggies, go out and get some sun, get you know, move for like 30 minutes an hour a day, your sleep will be so refreshed. And there's nothing better than getting, you know, great sleep. So I had the worst times with it when I worked nights at Toyota, and I started improving myself as far as food intake, physical fitness. And it's so true when people say sleep on it, because it's so funny, and you might have experienced this before too. It's when you wake up, your brain just functions at such a high level, like things, just ideas and possible things to improve your life just comes and pops in your head. I have a notepad on my nightstand just because sometimes I have to write things down because it's going to go after I'm awake for 30 minutes. And,
you don't.
And
you're absolutely right. Hey, we're going to come back. Joseph, thank you. We're going to be back in a moment. More on Coast to Coast AM. Well, it sure is, and it's time for our traditional shout-out and thanks for supporting Coast to Coast AM. Those of you listening to your favorite radio stations around this planet, in North America specifically, 573 strong, thank you so much. Coast Insiders, thank you for supporting the program. XM Talk Channel 246, and then the various chat rooms and groups, of course. We have Into Infinity, Imaginative Worlds, the National Radio Club, Sorcery IRC, the Fantastic Forum 2 folks, Northern Kentucky Paranormal Group, Above Top Secret, Hollywood Ghost Hunters, the SoCal UFO Meetup Group. And, you know, by the way, when you are participating with Coast to Coast and listening to the program, I just want you to know how much we appreciate everything you do to keep this program humming along. And then we have our dear buddy Greg the Cook in St. Louis. Thanks to all of you for supporting Coast to Coast Day Out. Okay, back with you. Open lines. We're going to do this again next hour as well. Let's go east of the Rockies. Alicia's with us in Beaufort, South Carolina. Hi, Alyssa.
Hello.
Hello there.
I'm calling to tell you what's in the jar that you and Joshua P. were referencing earlier.
Okay, what is it?
Well, it's kind of murky looking, but I can see a ribbon, and there are letters on the ribbon, and it spells out P H E-B-Y, Speedy, S-U-E, Sue, H-I-L-L, Hill. Speedy, Sue, Hill.
But what does that mean?
I thought you would recognize that because I'm your age. There was an Alfred Hitchcock or a Twilight Zone, or there was another series that was kind of in, of that ilk, and it was a story. One of the episodes was kind of taking place in the general store, and there was a specimen jar on the counter. And it was very murky, and people would come in and say, "What is that? What's in that jar?" And everybody would speculate, and then finally someone noticed this ribbon, and as they kind of got closer and closer, unfortunately, it was the head of Speedy Sue Hill.
So
I thought you would recognize that. You need to look it up if you haven't seen it.
I will do that. That in one of the old Twilight Zones. Hey, thanks, Elizabeth. Appreciate it. Tom's got a text for us back in the L.A. studios. What do you have, Tom?
Sure do. This is from David in South Dakota. He says, "Hey, George, what's your take on demons? Do you really think they exist?"
Oh, of course. I think demons exist. I think people are possessed. You know, there are some people, many ghosts that are out there, but we've had people on the program, guests, who say that demons do not exist. I don't agree with that. I think demons are real, and you know, it's a very strange part of this universe.
Do you think a demon can attack anybody at any time?
No, I don't think it can attack anybody at any time. I think some people have an incredible ability to ward them off. I think it's the people who let their guard down, people who could be drinking a lot, things like that, that they let the demons in.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you have to kind of let them in with your mind to be able to get possessed.
Yep.
That's my thinking.
All right, you got it. Let's go to James in Los Angeles. Welcome to the program, James. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you doing, George?
Good, James. How are things in L.A.? I'll be back soon enough.
Oh, it's, you know, same as always. A lot of people out here.
Oh, yeah.
I've been wanting to tell you this story for a while. I'm a limo driver here in L.A. A lot of the time in Santa Monica. But before I did this, I drove taxis for 1 year.
Okay.
And this one night, I picked up this guy near Pico and 20th, okay? And I'll just give you a visual to describe him. He was African-American, about 25, got a nice, you know, light blue sweater on, you know, slacks, and a leather bag under his arm, right?
Okay.
And he gets in, you know, clean cut and everything. So he gets in and tells me where he wants to go. And so we're going down the road, and I had the music playing very low. And all of a sudden, I hear this whispering behind me. Like, it was like slow, guttural, low whispering. Uh-oh. Okay.
Coming from him?
Yes. Okay. And man, this. Before I proceed, let me, you know, I'm a big guy. I'm 6 foot, 230 pounds. I was in the Marine Corps for 4 years. Later on in Iraq, I was a civilian contractor. I was a convoy truck driver.
Okay.
And let me tell you, this guy scared me to death. It, like, I felt pain in my heart. And as soon as I heard, and like, so he did it again, more slow, guttural whispering, you know, and the only words that I ever made out were, "I feel good." Like, I don't even want to do an imitation. I don't want people to hear it, but
yeah.
So he did it like one more time, three times altogether. And it was a short ride. So we finally get to the destination. And so he gets out and he's digging in his pocket to give me the money. And I had to say something, you know, so I was like, man, you're freaking me out with that whispering, man. And, you know, each time he did it, like, I would turn around, I would say, like, you know, what was that? You know, were you saying something? He's like, no, I was just listening to music. And then, you know, another time, I said, were you saying something? Do you have earplugs in or something? You know, he's like, no. Like, nothing was wrong, you know?
Jeez.
And so he gets out, and I tell him, I was like, man, you're freaking me out with that whispering. And he hands me the money, and he's like, here. And the look in his face is like he was legitimately offended. Like, I really hurt his feelings.
I wonder if he even knew he was doing it.
Exactly. Exactly. It was like he was either possessed or had like a few different people living inside him or so. I don't know what it was. It scared me to death, man. It was.
But those are fears. You want to get them to their destination and get out.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was, regarding your last question about whether demons exist, man, that really made me think twice. I felt something. It was, it made my hair stand up.
Oh, yeah, those things are the real things. I wouldn't know what I would do if I were driving somebody like that and they started doing it, especially when they're behind you. Slava is in Pittsburgh. Hello, Slava. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for taking call. I want to talk about sleep pattern, waking up in the middle of night.
Okay.
First, I apologize for accent. It's hard time understand.
No, you're doing well.
First to tell you, I'm 30 years old. I moved from Romania to the United States when I was about 14 years old. Okay. Mm-hmm. I want to tell you, I wake up oftentimes in the middle of night as if I have alternate reality. I'm waking up after having rally with my fellow countrymen to overthrow Nicolae Ceausescu. I obviously, as I tell you my age, I was not old enough to take part in anything such. However, I oftentimes find myself in basement or, above everything, the attic. Mm-hmm. I find myself meeting with my peers, with fellow, in the United States, you say, protesters. We are planning an overthrow. Obviously, this did take place. And sometimes I feel like I get information, real true information in what maybe you may say is a dream, could be a dream, but I oftentimes feel as though I am feeling someone else's true memories from prior to the overthrow. And it's a very holy or spiritual thing to me to have the memories of someone who actually took place in a great leap forward for my country. And I just want to say thank you for taking my call, and I'm glad that there's somewhere that can relate to me. Thank you.
You're welcome, Slava. It's got to be very strange to be able to put yourself in that kind of an environment through the eyes of somebody who was there. I mean, that's incredible that was able to happen for you. Let's go to Hugh in Grants Pass, Oregon. Welcome to the show, Hugh. Go ahead.
Hi, George. I just wanted to congratulate you on your new contract. I'm glad that that corporation has the ability to see what a great interviewer you are.
Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome, George. There's so many things I could talk about. I've been surrounded by reptilians. I've talked to you in the past. And it's a true story.
Mm-hmm.
I have so much to say that I've kept inside for six decades, George, since the 50s. I'm trying to find a ghost writer to write my story because I don't think I'd live through it if I wrote it myself. I want to thank Christine Day for her channeling and prayers. It's helped me immensely. I haven't had a chance to use the bitter lemon yet. Mr. Slava, I believe his name was, he should write those memories down that he has.
Yes.
When you put a pad of paper next to him. I have traveled through time. To this day, I still get phone calls from the island back in the Philadelphia experiment. I had one this morning. There's so many things, George, I could talk about.
Well, let me ask you here, when you say you get phone calls, who's calling?
No one ever answers. I just get the phone calls two to three times a week. It doesn't matter where I am. They come and they trace they're always traced back to a road on an island offshore of New York. And so many things, George. The last living Civil War veteran on the Confederate side, his wife died on my farm in Tennessee. And more recently, my wife died Halloween Day.
Oh, I'm sorry.
About 2 years ago. And I've had a phenomenal life that is the history of this country that's been hidden. And I need a good writer who would do it as a ghostwriter. I have documents and factual information.
You
can help me with that, please, George.
I tell you what, send us a little note. And also, though, listen in for any specific guests that you might hear on the program that might kind of match what you're doing, and then we can approach them for you as well. Sounds like, yeah, you need someone to write a biography of you. That's what you need. Let's go to Duke in Dayton, Ohio. Welcome to the program. Hi, Duke.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, last night you had Nick Begich on, and he was talking about the
HARP,
shutting down of HARP and how he was hearing that it was going to be placed in the hands of a contractor organization. And then he went on to say, and of course, as we all know, when you do that, you're shutting out the American public's ability to get freedom of information responses, because corporations are immune from freedom of information. And I wondered to myself, you know, I've heard Begich on there before. He sounds like a pretty reasonable guy.
He is.
So my thought was, is he just uninformed, or is he really trying to mislead the audience? You know, for somebody to get on and make statements like that, it's just ludicrous. You know, he's correct to the letter of the law, meaning that you can no more send a letter to, I don't know, Aerodyne Corporation. I'm just pulling one out of the air. And ask them for freedom of information no more than you can the Pepsi-Cola company.
Right.
That he's right about. On the other hand, and he made this point later in the call, that they are under contract to the U.S. government, and they are operating U.S. government equipment on a U.S. government facility. It is a U.S. government program. So he's right. You can't send anything to the people at the contractor, but you can send it to the government. And because that's a government contract, you can get anything you want, as long as it's within the bounds of freedom of information. You can get meeting minutes. You can get any kind of email. You can get any kind of deliverable that was required under the contract. Reports, monthly activity reports, any kind of deliverable. You can get from the government on that program, even if it's being run by a contractor.
Well, what about like the NSA? I mean, I bet if we asked them for specific stuff, we'd never get it.
Well, that's why I qualified what I said within the confines of the freedom of information tenets. You know, there's certainly things that are national security. Things that go into an entity's, especially a company's, financial status, so forth and so on. Sure, but Nick Begich wasn't talking about the NSA. He was talking about a company, a contractor, and in effect saying, this is how the government dodges and hides and gets around the FOIA. That's not how you get around FOIA. It is impossible. So let me reiterate something I said to you maybe 2 or 3 months ago. I highly recommend you get a FOIA expert on it. If nothing else, George, call your congressman. Tell him who you are. Tell him you do a show. And there's a lot of misinformation, misunderstanding on how FOIA works. Let them get you a FOIA expert. Get them on the air. And let them explain how the process works, so that when you get people like Begich on there who is either, one, very misinformed, or two, going out of his way to misinform your audience, people will say, well, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, so, I think when you were on with me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but did we talk about how when you get UFO reports from the government, they're all blacked out?
Again, all I can tell you is that the, you know, and certainly the folks from the, you know, who are coming to come on and talk about FOIA can explain this much better than I can. They understand the actual law. But the law says that, well, first of all, George, you're an old public information officer. You know that anything personal, any personal information has to be redacted. You can't send something out with personal information. And so consequently, if you're going to get a report like that, you and I both know that all the information relative to the individual, let's assume it's a pilot chasing a UFO, you know all the pilot's information to be redacted. That's privacy. That's, you know, it's privacy. That's the way it is. But that's
the meat of the whole subject, and we just don't get those good ones, do we?
Well, I can honestly tell you, George, I've never looked at a FOIA response about a UFO sighting. I can't answer that. But what I can tell you is that the law is the law, just like we heard with the Zimmerman thing. The law is the law. If you don't like the way the FOIA thing is let me tell you something. There were a lot of people who worked a lot of hard hours, made a lot of sacrifices to get the FOIA to where it is. The FOIA process is an outstanding process. Is it perfect? No. But, no, the biggest problem, and I've answered these, I told you before, the biggest problem is you get these things, and people don't understand how the process works, and they'll, you know, I've gotten responses, or requests, rather, that I know people have labored over. I can see, you know, 30, 40 hours worth of work. And the answer, you know, of course, I'm not an attorney, but you know, we would go through the JAG and the legals, and the answer was always the same.
Well, I tell you what, we'll look into, because we're at the clock here. We'll look into somebody who might want to talk about that, if we can find someone who can explain it as well as you. You're pretty good. I'll be back in a moment. More open lines on Coast to Coast AM.